the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharma Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Dhamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. with this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. But the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy, blessed day. Oh, happy, blessed place. Oh, happy, blessed time. Oh, happy, blessed path. Oh, happy, blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to native awakening, or even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day. There must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
Allow yourself to just be here, breathing. Letting the breath come through you. And counting the exhalations. If the attention wanders off of counting, gently bring it back. As best as you are able, allow your body to relax. The shoulders relax, the abdomen. Just breathing. Just here. nothing to do, nothing to get. Just being here with the breath and being with life as it is. Just being with the breath, being with the sensations as the air enters your body and fills your body and leaves your body. Just being there for it and breathing. Thank you. We are
in your attending suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
The noise factor from the water. Usually okay?
I'm doing pretty well right now.
Okay, great. All right, what shall we look at? Jen?
I just wanted to mention that for folks who are new to practice, they're welcome to get backups if they'd like, back here in the corner of the room.
Thank you.
And also a reminder that we record groups for folks who are monthly members.
Thank you. So feel free to grab a back jack if you would like. Now's the time. A couple of takers. What shall we look at this morning? Rebecca?
Well, I've been looking at this, something we say a lot in practice, which is that, you know, supposedly the Buddha was practicing until the day he died.
We have heard those rumors.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I always assumed I knew why, you know, like, well, because just egocentric karma conditioning is so strong, it can, you know, it'll just, you know, no matter where you are in your practice, you know, we always need to stay close to practice because of that. But something about the way I heard it a few weeks ago made me really look and see deeper, just want to look at that deeper.
Okay,
see, well,
perfect.
No, so really, why? You know, or what is it? Like, it's not really why. It's more like, what is it about practicing even to the day he died that is something that for me, for us, you know?
Yeah. Well, to start with, just one of the things that you pointed out, which I think is really important for all of us, is that oftentimes when information comes in like that, it's conditioned mind that will come in and say, yes, I know what that's all about.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So bringing us to that place, all of us to that place of, I'm not sure that I actually do know what that means. And
yeah.
So let's see if we can get a bigger perspective on it.
Yeah.
So really, that's what practice is all about. So that's really terrific. And can you start us off with a discussion? So what was the initial understanding of it?
Oh, the initial, the part that I thought I knew?
That would be a great place to start, sure.
Yeah. Well, just that if we ever stop practicing, we can be assured to be swept under by egocentric karmic conditioning again. That was sort of the place that I was, because it's just too deeply ingrained to ever coast, ever think that we can coast. And then there's a...
Hold up a second, because something was just dropping in. So with that, then there's really two interpretations available for that kind of thing, right? So there is that sense of believing that the voices and what we call egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate has that kind of power.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. That it will, I mean, that can happen, right? If we believe that, then... we're giving that power to it in some sense, that it has the power to sweep us away.
Yeah.
And so that makes us like yay big.
Yeah.
Right?
And then David against the Goliath.
That's right. Yeah. And on the other hand, my experience is that's really true. That not in the way of giving it power, but just in the way, as you describe it, that it really is a very deep, deep habit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that it's easy to get pulled in by it.
Yeah. And, so over the last couple of weeks, as I've been watching this, what dropped in is that working out our own salvation diligently, that supposedly were his last words, we must each do that, right? Work out. And the word work is what really I was looking at, because it's... Practice, we can say, practice is our life's work. It's, there's a way that it can get sort of diverted into, well, I'm a profession, or I'm a, like a parent, or I'm a this. Mm-hmm. But really, one's life work, first and foremost.
Yeah.
And that would shed light on why, of course, the Buddha was practicing till the day he died, because that is what we're here to do. It's just that.
Yeah. Boy, that's great, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so what was dropping in as you were talking was that the practice is just being with life.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's conditioned mind, which opposes life, which attempts to take us out of life and into suffering, into its world, right? And so... that is our life's work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what else is there?
Yeah, what else?
It's like, what other alternative do we have? And with that, there's many paths, as you were saying. So we might get diverted in all kinds of places, and it may not look like we're doing practice, but everybody on the planet is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the place where we say everybody is a Buddhist, because Buddhism is a path to freedom, and everybody wants to be free.
So it's just been very fun to explore, and I loved that place that you were describing, that you were reflecting at first, that place where it's just, I don't know, where it gives a space for the spirit of inquiry to just bubble up. And so
Nice. So that's great, isn't it? So there's that initial understanding of it, and then at some point there was an openness to life. And then life dropped in, kind of the next piece, we should say.
Mm-hmm.
That the understanding was limited in some way, or fitting for where you were in practice at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you were ready for it, the openness was there, life just drops in the next piece of it, which is, hey, look at it like this.
Yeah.
And then the openness just increases exponentially. And, and practice notches up with that.
Yeah, yeah. Insights are there, and practice. Yeah, it's just a little. It's just expansive with the open mind.
Yeah, yeah. The other piece about that is, I go to. Once we fall in love with practice, why would we ever want it to end?
Exactly. Yeah.
And it seems like that's what we're doing a lot in practice, is learning to fall in love with life and to play that game, which is we're in life, we know it, it's an expansive feeling, it's great, and then the next minute, you know, we're less than that.
Yeah.
And life is smaller, and at some point, that's the only game in town.
Yes, and you know, something the guide said to me one time was that egocentric karmic conditioning is trying to rob us of the most important relationship in life, which is the relationship with life. You know, and it's dropped in, and I've been, you know, from the mentor, and I've been recording that's my birthright. That's all of our birthright, to live in that relationship with life. And so why would we ever want to not cultivate that and practice that and reinforce that? And all
makes
that.
Sense, doesn't it?
Because it is the greatest gift of a human being.
Exactly.
And how?
Yeah, like we said, what else is there?
What else is there?
And it's remarkable that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate can keep so many people in bondage for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly because there's not a lot of information about the alternative available up there.
Yeah.
In very few places.
Yeah.
It's a good thing we're here.
It's a good thing we're here.
We specialize in that kind of information. So,
thank you.
Okay. Yeah, Jim.
I have an example of not believing voices.
Great. So an example of not believing the voices?
Yes. It happened in meditation. I felt like something was stinging me on the back of the neck. It was really intense, and it was making my body kind of shiver in response. And the guidance, the practice is sit still.
Yeah.
So again, and this is not the first time something like this has happened. I know that it is possible to sit still through it, even though the voices in my head were just screaming. You've got to reach back there and find out if indeed something's biting you.
I mean, it could be a tick, it could be a mosquito, it could be like a miniature rattlesnake or something. Because that's what the voices do, isn't it? They really, they hype it up. It's it just provides a lot of fear, and death is in the offing. Whatever it is, it's dangerous, and it's really, we can kind of joke about it here, right? But that's the way it works, isn't it? That conditioning, in order for it to feel real, it has to get us to do stuff. That's where it gets to be concrete. And so in doing what you just did, and essentially what we're all doing in this practice, is sitting still, especially in meditation, we're asked not to leave for any reason, right? So sitting still through all of that.
And as it turned out, nothing was fighting.
Actually, conditioned mind was fighting. We could say something like that. Yeah, yeah, and it's the reason we call it the hero's path, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of going up against conditioned mind in that way, where it has a lot of skill. You don't want to give it too much, but it's been training for a really long time. And it has the ability to create body sensations, attach meanings to body sensations, just like that, to get us to do things. And then as we sit still with it, then it starts to up the ante to that place that I think that you're looking at. It starts to agitate more completely, more fully. It starts to pull out the bigger guns, as we might say. And so with practice, then, we learn to really sit, to stay put during the whole works.
Yeah. Yes. Just that very thing, has the being able to stay basically still in the middle of just raging sensation.
Exactly, boy, that is, yep, that's it, isn't it?
Just mind chatter to the nth degree is to me what I'm talking about in large part when I say freedom.
What's that, freedom?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly in your experience, right? So. There it is, and it is saying all of what might happen and really trying to get you to move. And in the end, you sit still, you get freedom, and it's revealed that everything it was saying was a lie. Mm-hmm.
It's never quite as believable again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So even if it comes back, it's like... I think I've been here before. and we start to view it with a little more skepticism.
Yes.
Kind of like, well, wait a minute. Well, let's check credentials here. Let's just see. You know, you've got a track record of lying and stealing and cheating and kind of whatever will grab the attention. You know, that's on your resume. And so I'm a little suspicious that perhaps not this time. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you.
I wanted to chime in about life's work that really resonated for me, and I had an experience recently of just being in a really, really stuck place with an attack, basically, attacked by conditioning. And I was awake kind of in the middle of the night.
Ooh, that's a nasty place for that.
Yeah.
That's a favorite spot for conditioning to come in, isn't it?
Yeah. And
did it wake you up, or did you just wake up on your own?
It's kind of hard to tell. I was waking up around the same time every night at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows,
yeah.
Right? You know, you can talk to an Oriental medicine practitioner and they'll tell you something about that, or you can, you know, I mean, who knows? I think part of it actually was I was going through a pretty severe depression.
Hmm.
So besides for like waking up and not sleeping, you know, there was all this other depression stuff happening. So maybe, you know, that was it. But what it was talking to me about was kind of what a mess my life was in.
Making a list?
Like right now it's a mess, and back then it was a mess,
and in the future it's going to be a mess.
It's like you can just, like taking my inventory. I realized, like, a lot of times when I've been very depressed in the past, it's been about kind of this search for my life's work in the world.
Hmm.
And I would kind of, go in a direction and hit a roadblock and be really down and disappointed about that and pick up and go somewhere else and, like, hit another roadblock. And I just got this as I was, you know, and there's always someone, it seems like, if I was going to say, like, that's what I'm depressed about.
Is that you don't have
is
a life?
Is my life hasn't, yeah, like, I've
there's
never
no
found myself or something. There's always this kind of, somebody who kind of buys that, maybe, and then checks out.
Hmm.
Because it's just too hard. Like, if that's really what my life's work is, to find my way in the world, I'm never gonna get there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what conditioning wants me to believe.
Resignation. checks
pretty
out.
Much like you tried as hard as you possibly could, and you know, look where you are. Look at the mess your life is in. And it just, you know, because I've been doing a lot of practice and talking to the mentor, you know, when this arose, and it was like, it was heavy. Mm-hmm. You have done everything wrong, you know, basically, your whole life.
Yeah. In that place, that's what gets said.
Yes.
In other places,
pretty much.
It's not, it doesn't, that isn't the case, right? But in that place, that is what gets said. Pretty much your whole life, you've been like this forever, that's the way it is, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was this sense of someone left, someone somehow prone to believing that, without, if there was no other kind of information there.
So left with conditioned mind, basically.
Left alone with conditioned mind, yeah. And in that experience, it was like, that's happened to that part of me, you know, over and over, where there's no one left there except conditioning and this person believing it and suffering.
And so she's the one that's required to get on the treadmill. She's the one that's required to have meaning in her life. Try harder. If you can find a life's passion, you won't be depressed, because your life will have meaning, you'll have the energy you want, you'll have the life you want, right? And so she believes that, and then moves out and tries to do that, and then always meets with something that's not quite, it doesn't quite work out, and then she's right back in where she started.
Well, I'm surprised you know this story so well.
Anybody else know this story? It's all that unusual.
I think
you laid it out is really clear, too.
Like I said, I've been there over and over. So I think that part of it is exactly what you're saying, like in the end game, where she's really suffering and conditioning's just eating it up. She's actually so young that she couldn't do the things necessary. You know, when someone goes back out there to face the world, it's other, like, older parts of me that are trying. And I think that the biggest part of her suffering is that she feels completely inadequate to do what she's being asked to do.
Mm-hmm. Because she's really young.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the difference in this experience that resonated for me this morning, the difference was that there's that information coming from conditioning, there's this person who suffered so much, and then there's another, like, compassion comes in. Mm-hmm. And I had this experience, I think I just heard it, you know, this, I'm here for you, and this is my life work.
Mm-hmm. That relationship. Is
yeah, I'm like, I'm here now. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to leave you alone again. And this is it. What else?
Yeah, what else? It comes right back to that, doesn't
what
it?
What else is there? Yeah, there's all that other stuff. But my God, looking back, it was always taking me to her.
Oh, that every experience you were having.
Trying in the world, you know.
Yep. Yep. So she's kind of there waving at you the whole time. I'm here.
Yeah.
And so how has this experience changed your life?
Well, I certainly had a very different experience of depression, quote unquote.
Mm.
That go round. I just
so let me hold you up there. So the experience was it wasn't that you didn't. You didn't get depressed, but the experience of the depression was much different.
The resolution of it, like, so I was very depressed, and leading up to this experience I'm talking
right,
about.
Right.
So I was, my experience is it won't go away in a day. and so although I had that, feeling of like connecting with the compassion, you know, I was still not well, you know, not feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much decided, serendipitously, there was an email class going on at the same time.
A little support from the monastery.
Yeah. Right? And I had signed up for it. And the guide was talking about how recording and listening is going to do the trick on depression if you give it, you know, enough of yourself, if you give it enough. And so I basically really upped my game with practice.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing the email class. I signed up for Stop Dropping Text. I'm doing Zen awareness coaching, and then I sign up for this retreat.
Kind of like there's conditioned mind, and you're putting in the stakes all the way around it.
Right. Well, the thing is, like, somehow somebody stepped up and said, you know what, I worked really hard, you know, at my career, quote unquote, and at the moment I'm on partial disability from my career, and so I can't work really hard at it. But I can work really hard at practice, like, I know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, and I think the experience that I had was I did get a huge break from the stories, from the self-hating stories of voices.
Uh-huh.
And really, without the self-hating stories and voices, depression, is a really different thing.
Yeah.
You know, like what's going on in my body and kind of how I feel is so much easier to manage when like my head is on straight. You know,
not involved in that conversation with those stories.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, now I'm feeling fine.
And also,
luckily, the email class was also focusing on the body, and for our year too. And so I've also been upping my physical activity, which is hugely supportive.
Yeah. So it sounds like a lot of attention going towards practice, right? Really increasing that desire to have the attention with life and with compassion, and availing yourself of as many of the practice opportunities as you could to move in that direction.
Yes, and almost like inverting, and that what that is kind of like an inversion of my life where we talk about putting bringing your practice into your life versus bringing your life
yes.
into your practice. I think there was a switch that flipped, and it's like practice is it.
Mm.
And everything has a place, you know, in that, in my life.
Yeah, there's someone in there who says, yes, sign me up for that and that and that. Yeah, and is willing to do the recording and listening. As you said, willing to, I think we talked about this earlier too, to follow the guidance.
Yes.
Here's guidance on the radio coming from the guy that says, depression doesn't stand a chance if you're willing to record and listen enough. and finding the willingness to do that and finding for yourself that that's true. Liz.
I've been kind of noticing the tricks of the conditioned mind recently, particularly just with my regards to just the practice in general, in that the conditioned mind will say things to me that on the surface maybe seem supportive of practice, and then turn it around against me. The best example, this is my first retreat, and in the beginning, signing up, preparing, you know, the conditioned mind was telling me, this is going to be too hard, you can't do it.
There it was again, telling lies.
And I felt like I was able to not listen, to really get past that and just continue, essentially, to breathe, and felt pretty proud of the courage that it took. And as I got closer and closer, then that conditioned mind almost said, okay, she's got this, so we're going to try another approach. So, okay, yes, you're going to have a wonderful experience. What's going to happen when you get back, though? And so it was like, okay, I'm finally accepted that I was coming here. Yes, it will be beautiful, but yeah, what's going to happen when you come back? And the idea, though, of our life's work being this practice, one of the last readings before I put away all of my readings talked about the idea of bringing, as opposed to bringing your spiritual practice to your daily life, bringing your daily life to the spiritual practice.
Yep.
And to me, that really helped with this, with what the conditioned mind was saying about, okay, you're going to have this beautiful experience, but what about when you get back? And the conditioned mind wanted to tell me that I would be pretty much all alone. And when I read that, I didn't feel alone anymore, and it was like the world just kind of opened up, this idea that I'll be bringing, as a gift to my daily life, I will be bringing that into my spiritual practice.
So in that openness that came in with that idea of bringing all of your daily life into practice, then all of the voices of conditioning just became way less believable.
Yes.
That it was easy just to stay with life, to be here, and it's just so simple and clear that when this comes in and starts to do that, it's like, I'd have to be nuts to go off with that at this point, to leave this experience, to go off with that to wherever it was going. Yeah.
And it made the those voices and this idea of daily life feel like, instead of feeling like this evil power, it made them feel like just kind of little children that then I could just bring into this and envelop and bring into the spiritual practice. They completely changed character.
Yeah, because we talk about the illusion of a separate self. So it feels like when we're inside conditioned mind, then that's when it feels like it's real. And that world that it's all of these voices are supporting, it's really believable. And like we talked about before, there's power to them in some sense. And when we move outside of that and can see them for exactly what they are, for that illusion, then it really is like, what is the problem here? It's just these little wispy things running around saying things and kind of nonsensical. Who would believe those kinds of things? Yeah. Now, you're also way ahead of the curve. Most people don't get to the what's going to happen when you get home until about day 7. So
yeah, the conditioned mind was really trying hard there, for sure. Yeah.
Well, it's always interesting, isn't it? Because that's the way it works, is that with fear and retreats, it's a roving, fear's a roving event. Beforehand, it's what's going to happen on retreat? What, what's that going to be like? And there's conditioning, you know, not really understanding what that's going to be like. And then once on retreat, it's, you know, what are they going to ask us to do next? Or something along those lines. And then the last day it comes in with, well, you know, there's fear about going home. And so the content changes, but the process of fear stays exactly the same. And as long as it can get us with that process, then it'll do it. And so we have to go through a number of different contents in order to really reveal the process of suffering to us, to see how fear can capture the attention and move us into that world, right? We go back and forth. And as we do that, we get an education as to how that process works, how suffering works, and that's where the freedom is. Yeah, just like you were doing. Thank you.
For me, the voices are hard to handle when they're half true. For example, see, as soon as I wake up in the morning, I'm thinking, oh, what do I have to do today? And then I've got this list, all these things I have to do. And I do have to do them, I need to do them. These voices tend to get me earlier and earlier and earlier in the morning. So I imagine there's some anxiety that I go to bed a couple of times and thought about, okay, am I really going to be something or what to do tomorrow? Or am I going to be filled with stuff that I have to do to take care of? So it's hard to come back. Or it's hard to respond to those voices because I really do have to go grocery shopping. I really do have to walk the dogs. I really do have to whatever. I mean, it could be whatever. Those really do have to get done. And they do seem to take the day. And I really do want to get back to painting. I used to paint, and I haven't been doing it for a while. I want to get back to it. But the voices say, well, paint area is really too messed up. You got to straighten it up first. Okay, I'll straighten it up after I take care of these other things. It's the do list that keeps sinking in. It's hard for me to handle that. And the irony about all this is I'm retired.
Yeah, so in theory, when you're retired, there's not supposed to be anything that you have to do.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I had a friend once who retired. I think he retired when he was 45. And I used to kid him about that he would need to get a job before he could relax. So immediately, you know, did the 5-acre garden and then built a new house. And then, you know, all of this stuff came in and he was endlessly busy with it. So one thing that dropped in as you were talking was, it's not required to do any of it in the company of conditioned mind.
Would you explain that, please?
Could you give us an example of some, well, let's use a couple of things that you said. So one was with painting.
Yes.
Okay, so there's this, I would guess, a natural urge towards doing some painting.
Yes.
Okay? And conditioning, one of its favorite tricks is to take that desire that we could say comes from authenticity or from life to just do that. Now, there's no shoulds in that. There's no requirements. There's just this sense of letting life come through me via painting. Would that work in that experience?
Dogs are walking. Grocery shopping has to be done.
Well, that's what happens to that, isn't it?
Yeah, but those things have to be done.
Well,
it's
that's a good question, isn't it?
And then social things,
And so when you do that, then what is it like when you're walking the dogs?
I'm hurrying them a little bit. I'm trying to slow down and make it their walk. Because there are two of them.
Right.
And So I'm a little bit conflicted. I want to do what's right. I love them. I do. I want them. I'm happy to have them.
So again, there's a, from what you said, there's a natural desire to take care of these dogs in because you love them.
True.
And then at the same time, there's that sense of hurry.
Yes.
Okay.
And a couple of the other things that I really feel I need to do, I need to try to get some cardio every day, almost so, every day, and I do have some exercises that I do because of.
So there's a long list.
And the issues and
yep.
various back issues. So those need to be done.
So let me paint a picture of a process, and then you can tell me if this works with your experience. So there is that desire to do some painting.
Yes.
And then conditioning comes in and says, well, not now. Let's do something else. And then in that, when that desire gets thwarted, there's a little disappointment. Because not getting to do the painting. And then
there's disappointment if I don't do the exercises, because I know if I don't do
exactly.
the exercises, I'm gonna hurt.
Exactly. And so there's disappointment in every direction.
Yes.
And then what conditioning wants to do is to ask disappointment to do all of these things. So the person who is feeling that disappointment is the one that conditioning says, okay, you have to take the dogs for a walk.
And but if I just jumped right over to the easel and took out the paints, I'm not going to feel good about not taking the dogs for a walk. I'm getting exercise I need too.
Right.
That makes sense.
Right. And we're going to do some more exercises in this retreat exactly about that. And basically what it boils down to is any decision that you make inside a conditioned mind is going to lead towards suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of it?
Vaguely.
Okay.
I mean, I know, I understand the concept intellectually, but when I'm working with all these things, it's hard to juggle all that. And then the husband will listen to you when you're upset because his computer is...
Yeah, there it goes again, isn't it? Yeah, and if you were to just go with any one thing in that, then it sounds like conditioning is just not going to let you. To go with something you really love to do in this moment, conditioning is always going to come in and go, well, what about this? What about that? What about and to you? And that's the place I'm talking about.
Okay.
That, can you see it? That you never really get to put your put yourself into some of these tasks just for fun, because conditioning is looking to take your life force and move it into suffering. And it sounds like that endless list of well, I can't do that because I need to do that. Then when all of that's done, I'll come back around and get to that. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the painting never gets done.
Right.
Yeah. So that's perfect for the content of this retreat, for looking at during this retreat. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Justin.
Just looking at that, I'm very familiar with that process myself. And, you know, what the thing I have seen about it, one thing I've seen about it is, you know, when I'm in that place that you guys were talking about,
yeah.
I can't see how it can work. Sometimes later on, though, when I will leave that place, you know, through doing practice, I'll step out of that place, and then I'm in a place where I'm not believing that whole story that you guys were, you know, that whole process that you guys were talking about.
Yes.
And then there's a place there where it seems miraculous, because there's a place where everything can work. And I can receive everything. So it might be, you know, like as you guys were talking about, I think well, I'll just use my own context. So I get to, there are all these things I have to do. I get to have the experience of life I want to have doing all of those things. In the process of suffering, I have to do all those things, but I don't get to have the experience of life I want to have in any of them. I don't get to be relaxed, at peace, I don't get to feel connected, have a sense of well-being. And it really is just a matter of the place I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So looking from life, then life only wants the best for you, and you can be in any of those situations and enjoy it. Be fully there, be fully present, and there's no suffering in it.
Yeah, and it really is. It really feels miraculous when I go from the one place to the other, because in the one, it feels hopeless. It feels like stuck, like I can't see any options other than the bad options I already have. You know, and whatever I do, it seems like, and this was being talked about earlier in the group, I think, too, whatever I do always has the same result. I always end up feeling, like I say, dissatisfied or something. But then, you know, but that's just what I see about that is that's just a perspective. I mean, when I'm in that perspective, no matter what happens, that's what's going to happen. Is I'm going to end up feeling dissatisfied. But if I'm not in that perspective, like if I'm a perspective and a process of feeling really like receiving, for example, then no matter what I do, I'm going to receive. I'm going to feel grateful. I'm going to feel happy. And the content doesn't particularly have to change. I don't have to, it's not like my to-do list changes.
It's your perspective that's changing.
Yes, the perspective is changing.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
I was just looking at what you suggested, you know, that we can do anything, but you don't have to do it with conditioned mind at full company.
Not required.
Not required. And, you know, it brings, I was looking at a little different content, but it brought me back to what we always talk about is it's not what, but how.
Yes.
And so, yes, life is all of these things that that are part of living. We feed ourselves and we do the laundry, and there's just a series of things that we need to get done. And the illusion is that we do them, first of all, and that they have to get done. Because what I was looking at is how, I mean, all of these things get orchestrated in the day, and what gets done, right? So that's sort of my experience over and over again, that no matter how long my to-do list is, what eventually gets done is what is able to get done. And there's a sort of a mysterious process, as Justin was talking about, of trade-offs that actually get made along the way. And so it's actually perfect. There's a way in which it all gets done. And really, to me, the salient point of what you were saying that dropped in is there's no problem with any of it. So there's no problem in the largest context that there's so many things to do. And there's no problem in that it may not all get done either. So I have the luxury of waking up and going, how present can I be to anything that I've got to do today?
Yes.
And that's simply the only perspective I bring to it. And so if I have to go to the grocery store and get the curriculum written and make it to meditation and all of those things, then those are all the things I have to do. I don't have control over whether all of them will get done, but I do have a choice on how I do them and what my experience is with everything that ends up happening. Yeah.
And then in that, if I'm in that perspective where I can, I'm controlling the perspective from that place of being in life, life can decide those things that get done. Mm-hmm. And in the other perspective, when we're inside conditioned mind, the things that are dropping in are the have-tos.
Well, it seems to me that, yes, and what I'm listening to is a conversation that forces me to have the suffering experience, right? There's contraction, there's urgency, it's telling me I have to do it, I have little time to do it, there's a squeezing contraction that I'm experiencing. But the only reason I'm having that experience is because
There's a voice telling me
I'm in that conversation.
I'm in that conversation.
Yeah.
And so the part of the practice that's interesting to me is not listening to that conversation just for a bit. It's difficult to do, but then to just see if I wasn't paying attention to that conversation and if I don't believe it, what really happens?
Yeah. What would be there?
What would be there? I mean, would I get it all done and feel happy? Would I get it not done and feel happy? Mm-hmm. It's really the absence of the feeling of the dissatisfaction that I'm being told all the time that really goes away. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah. And in that place, the only thing left is satisfaction.
Yeah, or just, you know, well, I got the groceries done and I got to be a decent human being and, you know, I forget all those things. And it's that shift in that perspective where the relevance of what it says is the standard of perfection starts to go away.
Mm-hmm. The idea that there is a perfect way to spend my day.
That's right.
Something like that. There's a perfect path through the to-do list, and it includes feeling good about everything on the to-do list, and it includes doing things perfectly and
or to do the whole to-do list in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. And with that, there's almost always more on the to-do list than can actually ever be done in a day.
Yes. And we never examine that belief. At least I don't. You know, when we're in that conversation, it's like, okay, it doesn't matter if you have a to-do list that's longer than the time available to do it, but you're still required to get it all done.
Exactly. Yeah. And if it's not too long, then there'll be things added in to make sure that it does get to
Well, no, the conversation, at least in my experience, is, well, you're wasting your time, right? What are all the things that you should be doing that you're not doing because you're relaxing? And I think if you alluded to that process, that we rapidly get to realize that it's really not, nothing it says is true. Everything it says is worth questioning.
Yep.
And it's really that believing it automatically often is the process of suffering.
Yeah, that does seem to be so.